Republicans unveil proposed Indiana House and congressional district maps. Businesses react to President Biden's vaccine order, plus a significant state legislative retirement and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 17th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana House Republican leaders defended the Indiana State House and congressional district maps they unveiled as the formal redistricting process began. House Speaker Todd Houston says the maps honored the goals he and his fellow leaders set out. Districts that follow the law are as compact as possible and keep communities of interest together.
People are going to think what they want to think, but I think we can stand behind coming here, presenting maps that met the goals that we had.
Asked specifically, though, about district changes that favor Republicans, Houston's own House district and the 5th Congressional District, for instance, Houston would only say population shifts were the primary driver of such changes. There could be further alterations to the proposed maps, potentially influenced, Houston says, by testimony from members of the public in House committee hearings this week.
There is no perfect in this process, and if people bring substantive, well-thought-out arguments, they'll certainly be considered.
The House Elections Committee will vote on the proposed maps next week. Are these the right maps for Hoosiers? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Jennifer Hollowell. Dr. Terry Jett, Butler University Professor of Political Science. And Nikki Kelly, State House Reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Reporter Brandon Smith. Before we get to my first question, I would like to pass along John Schwanis' apologies for misstating Tom New had been the state treasurer in Indiana. That was not correct. Jack New was the last Democrat to be state treasurer in Indiana. So, and of course, John's been kicked off the show for the week for his transgression. But Ann Delaney, Republicans have said for a while now that compactness and communities of interest were their top priorities beyond the, of course, legal guidelines. Did they accomplish that with these maps?
Oh, they made them compact all right. I mean, they compacted all the African-American votes together so that they didn't lose any majority-minority districts. Of course, they didn't gain any. If they had spread that out a little bit, we could have elected more African-American representatives in the Indiana General Assembly instead of having 80% African-American districts, which is what they gave us. And in terms of community of interest, what they've done is the Republicans have basically picked their voters, which is what they do. And they've done that successfully. If they had reduced the number of majority-minority districts, it would have been a red flag. It would have been perhaps the only red flag on a redistricting review by a court. So they didn't do that, but they didn't extend the opportunity to have African Americans elected from districts which are are African American or mixed, I should say. And that's what we need to do if we're going to increase the number of minority members in the Indiana General Assembly, and the Republicans absolutely refused to do it.
Jennifer Hollowell, one analysis by George Washington University political scientist Christopher Warshaw said that these maps, like the ones that were passed 10 years ago, are some of the most partisanly imbalanced, if you will, in the country over the last 50 years. Do you think that's a fair criticism?
I definitely don't. I think, if you look at the maps that Democrats passed back when they were in the majority, if you gave someone a copy of the Democrats' old map and these maps and said, show me which map is gerrymandered, of course it's the Democrat map. You look at these maps, they are clean and they make sense. They're compact. They do keep communities of interest together, which has been something that Democrats have long wanted. And they're also seeking to not split counties, not split townships as much as possible. So it is a incredible job in terms of what these districts look like. And it meets all the, not just the legal standards, but it meets all the standards that people would expect. The bottom line is the only way Democrats can significantly get what they want is if they did gerrymander.
That is absolutely not true. And in fact, on the Democratic maps, the Democrats controlled 52 of the seats in the House, not 70, which is what your now current maps are doing. It is absolutely not true. They are partisan and they are gerrymandered.
Dr. Jett, I want to go to you.
Any objective person would look at those two maps, and if you ask
the populations changed since then.
Hold on,
Jennifer,
Dr. Jett, I want to ask you this, which is the idea that, I mean, Indiana is a Republican state. No one can argue that. It controls all elected statewide positions at the moment, and has for a little while at least. So is there any? So if you're looking at these maps and you have what will look like 78% of the congressional seats going to Republicans and likely around 70% of the state House seats going to Republicans, does that strike you as a fair spread of where Indiana is politically?
I think it's an accurate spread, but unfortunately, what Dr. Warshaw was stating, and he used multiple methods to come up with his conclusions, is that Indiana's is 95% more biased toward one particular political party, the Republican Party, than most of the other district maps in the country. So it's not just arguments that he was just making off the top of his head. It was research that he's done. He's a well-accomplished professor out of George Washington University. I do think that we need to start thinking a little more intersectionally about representation and also consider whether or not people are really being represented by those that are in elected positions based on the legislation that's being passed. But I do see how the Republicans made those arguments with regard to making sure that counties are complete within one district and also that townships aren't split. So it's a sound argument to make, but we still need to look more differently at representation.
And Nikki Kelly, there were 2 days of hearings at the State House this week on these maps. And what stood out to you from what you heard?
Well, I think there were continued to be a lot of questions and concern about the transparency of the process. The process in general was a big theme of not liking it, saying it's being rushed. Obviously, they prefer the Independent Redistricting Commission. There were some specifics on some of the districts. There were some people who noted some improvements in areas like Fort Wayne, and there was a lot of talk about the congressional districts, even though, honestly, other than the 5th district, most of the congressional districts remained pretty status quo.
Yeah.
Well, I think Tennessee's trays has changed a little bit, too.
Well, I mean, they certainly changed where they are, but if you look at the partisan balance, if you will, like, and compare it to, for instance, the presidential results, other than the 5th, things have relatively stayed
the presidential
same.
Results, Trump carried Indiana by what, 58%?
Something like that.
Okay.
There might have been a little bit more than that, but yeah.
Not 78%.
It was around 58%.
So you cannot argue that these are nonpartisan because they clearly are partisan.
All right. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about redistricting in the coming weeks as the process continues, but for right now, several major companies in Indiana say they will require COVID-19 vaccines for their employees. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports many other Hoosier businesses say the Biden administration's proposed mandate on companies with at least 100 employees to either require vaccines or weekly testing goes too far.
The Indiana Chamber represents many of those businesses in the state. Last month, it launched a campaign to get companies to encourage their employees to get vaccinated. Still, Chamber President Kevin Brenniger says any decision to require vaccines should rest with individual companies.
Well, the Chamber is still of the position that it should be the employer's determination as to whether or not to require vaccination or proof of negative COVID test. This requirement or mandate from the Biden administration goes beyond that.
Brenniger says if the proposed federal requirement passes legal scrutiny, then the chamber will encourage Hoosier business owners to comply.
Jennifer Hollowell, Americans and Hoosiers, more than many other states, aren't getting vaccinated at the sort of numbers needed to really keep this virus under control. So is President Biden's move the right one?
I don't don't think it is the right one. I don't think the federal government should be mandating this. I think they should leave it up to individual organizations and businesses and communities. But look, that said, I believe the vaccines are safe. I'm vaccinated. I really wish more people would get vaccinated. I think that the government should probably look into doing other things to encourage and incentivize people to get the vaccine. And frankly, to also put out more information that addresses the questions and concerns that people are having. There are a lot of things floating around on social media and questions and concerns. And I think that they need to address those in full so that people can understand and have the comfort level to go and get vaccinated.
And Delaney, I don't think you could find someone more encouraging of getting the vaccine, and certainly a Republican more encouraging of getting the vaccine than Eric Holcomb. But he called this mandate from President Biden a bridge too far. Is he right?
No, he's not right. And he was willing to mandate, as was Senator Braun when he was in the legislature, he was willing to mandate the meningitis virus. That was okay because lives were at risk. Well, lives are at risk. Lives are at risk with COVID
yeah,
as
that,
well.
That right. As Jennifer points out, that meningitis vaccine mandate was only for public colleges and universities. Is there a difference though between on this relatively limited population in the case of the meningitis vaccine
so.
And
it's,
every business?
I think it's a government mandate, and it's the question of what the threat is. When they mandated the meningitis virus, the threat was in public universities. Okay, the threat from COVID is nationwide, and we can see what happens in states like Idaho that have made this a political issue instead of a health issue. And if the governor had any backbone at all, he would have mandated it a long time ago. I am so happy that President Biden has stepped forward because, frankly, I am tired of people who are so selfishly not getting it and continuing the spread and the hospitalizations and the deaths from this virus. I have grandchildren too young for the vaccine. And they are at risk from these people who don't see any real, not any need. They don't see any compulsion. They don't see any responsibility to bring this virus under control. And I am so glad we have a leader in President Biden when we don't have in our governor.
Nikki Kelly, we heard before the mandate and certainly once he announced the mandate of either the vaccine or weekly testing, by the way. It's not a mandate to get the vaccine or else. But we heard a lot of people saying, oh, well, I'm going to quit my job if my company forces me to do this. Do you think we're going to see thousands and thousands of people quitting their jobs?
I don't know. We might. I mean, I don't know if you've looked, but a lot of places are still hiring. And this only involves, you know, people, businesses with 100 employees or more. Also, I mean, if you look at, for example, IU Health, they, you know, had 100 people who left because they did not want to follow the vaccine mandate in a healthcare setting, which I think the nexus of is far greater than, you know, any general, you know, finance office or anything like that.
Yeah, but I think the fact that the pay was about $15 an hour made a difference in whether they decided to stay or go.
Well, I want to follow up on that idea that Nikki just kind of touched on, Dr. Jett, which is that we are already experiencing worker shortages across the country and across Indiana, across several sectors, where companies are struggling to get the workers they need. There are probably a lot of reasons for that, but will this sort of mandate exacerbate that problem?
It's possible. I sort of agree also with what Nikki suggested, but I actually think that we do need to think about this public health crisis and the fact that we don't have a vaccination for ready for children just yet. I mean, you know, what is our priorities? And the mandate is something that wouldn't be in place forever. It would be it's a short-term solution that would be hopefully sustain our, you know, ability to come out of this pandemic. But until we, you know, have something in place like that, then we're just going to continue in the same state and continue to suffer. So I think it's necessary. And we need to embrace it and move forward.
All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is President Biden right to force companies to have their workers either get the COVID-19 vaccine or undergo weekly testing? A, yes, or B, no. Last week we asked you if the average Indiana state government employee is underpaid, and 78% of you say yes, 22% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Based in Lafayette, Indiana's Dave Bangert reported this week that Indiana House Ways and Means Chair Tim Brown will retire after his term ends next year. The proposed Indiana House redistricting map draws Brown into a district with fellow Republican lawmaker Bo Baird, but Brown told Bangert he'd been contemplating retirement long before the maps were unveiled. Brown is the sixth longest-serving current House lawmaker, first elected in 1994, and has been Ways and Means chair for most of the last decade, helping craft five state budgets. Nikki Kelly, retirements after a round of redistricting are very common. We saw several 10 years ago, but how big a deal is this one?
Well, I mean, I think it is. I wasn't that surprised. Obviously, I think Doc Brown was getting near the end. He's served a long time. He wants to spend more time with his wife, that kind of thing. It is a bit of an issue for House Republicans because few people that were, you know, quote unquote, being groomed for Ways and Means have moved on to better things like the House Speaker. Todd Houston became the House Speaker. Holly Sullivan's the Secretary of State. So I'm intrigued to see who they're going to find to fill that spot. I mean, in terms of Representative Brown, though, I kind of consider it like, you know, if you're Tom Brady and you win the Super Bowl, you go out on top. Like, he just finished with, like, the easiest budget he's ever had. He had money to throw around and pay for anything he wanted. And so now he can go.
Terry, I think a lot of Hoosiers, maybe not so many who watch this show, but I think a lot of Hoosiers hear House Ways and Means and go, I don't know what that is. Is that important? But I mean, in terms of legislative committees and how they impact the state, it doesn't get bigger than that one, does it?
No, it doesn't. And it certainly is significant. So I think people should pay attention to what's going to happen next, although I don't know how much change is actually going to take place.
Jennifer Hollowell, in terms of choosing that next House Ways and Means chair, when Dr. Brown was chosen about a decade ago, a little less than that, he hadn't been on Ways and Means. He was the chair of House Public Health, but then Speaker Brian Bosma said, looking ahead, looking at the next several state budgets, health care was going to be such a major part of that, that that's why he chose Dr. Brown. In your mind, what's a priority for the next, what you want to see in the next Ways and Means chair?
Well, first, I mean, just let me say, Doc Brown has been an incredible leader. He's an excellent person. And so, I mean, he will be missed. There's no doubt about that. And as Nikki said, though, he really just put together one of the most amazing budgets with obviously wide bipartisan support. And so, you know, kudos to him. But as I think about it, I mean, first of all, there are several Republican legislators who are very capable and qualified, and I think would do a great job in that position. But it does also almost always feel like when that selection's made, whatever it is, we look through the past several years as people have taken on new roles, there's always some kind of questioning or head scratching or how will they, you know, perform as, you know, their predecessor did. And they're all different, right? I mean, everyone has different leadership styles and backgrounds, but the good news is we have a great bench and pool to draw from, and I'm sure that whoever selected will do a fantastic job.
And Delaney, sort of the same question, you know, what are you hoping to see from whoever the next Ways and Means chair is?
Well, I would hope to see somebody who had an appreciation for how the state operates and where the money should go, and also compassion for the people out there that need assistance from the state. I'm sure that the speaker has somebody in mind already for this position because they knew it was coming, which is why there's another Republican put into Dr. Brown's district. So I'm sure they're prepared for it. They probably will unveil it reasonably quickly into the session and make sure that person is hopefully up to snuff by the time comes to draw the budget in 2 years.
Before we move off of this one, Nikki Kelly, lastly on this topic, I talked with one House Republican this week who floated the idea that if they wanted to go a more short-term route, current Vice Chair Bob Cherry isn't going to be in the legislature for another decade, I would think, but would be willing to perhaps to do the job for maybe a cycle as they really start to groom someone, because as you pointed out, a couple of the people that they looked like they were doing that for have ascended to other positions. Could you see something like that playing out?
That could happen. I mean, I think it might be a better route to just choose someone and let them have that year under Doc Brown to really, you know, sit in on all his meetings and really get to know the ins and outs of that committee and those issues.
Yeah, not dissimilar from how Brian Bosma and Todd Houston handled that handoff. But moving on, more than 47,000 Hoosier households were using a payday loan in the last 12 months, according to the Indiana Institute for Working Families. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports, a new coalition aims to advocate for and educate Hoosiers about the dangers of payday lending.
Hoosiers for Responsible Lending is a coalition of veterans organizations, faith communities, consumer groups, and social service providers. It brings together groups that have spoken out against payday lending at the State House for years. Prosperity Indiana Coalition builder Natalie James says the alliance will push for legislation this upcoming session to stop predatory loans from taking advantage of Hoosiers in financial distress.
We seek to put an end to lending practices that target and trap vulnerable Hoosiers, extracting wealth from them and their communities.
Currently, payday lenders can charge up to a 391% interest rate annually on loans. The network of organizations is advocating it be reduced to 36%.
Dr. Jett, the last few years, the payday lending debate at the State House has largely resulted in a stalemate, really, between the two sides. Does a more cohesive, organized coalition like this change that?
Well, let's hope so, because this is a critical time for this issue to be addressed. I mean, we have so many people going into like payday collections, and this predatory lending cycle really is harming so many Hoosiers and so many families. And it also touches into the housing crisis. All these things sort of feed into one another. So let's hope that we have a legislature that will actually pay attention to the suffering that's taking place as a result of the declaration that a number of families will seek in going for these payday loans. So I hope this coalition, with their advocacy and their educational process, will really make a big difference.
Nikki Kelly, the payday lending debate at the State House has started to feel a little like Groundhog Day the last few years. Is this coalition the sort of thing that can stop Sonny and Cher from singing on that radio in the morning?
To be fair, there's been a pretty big coalition the last couple of years, and they still haven't gotten anywhere. It's one of those issues that really, you know, flummoxes me, because you look at where they're at, you know, 300% versus 36%, and you think there's got to be some sort of compromise in the middle between those extremes, and yet we can't seem to find it.
Yeah, and Delaney, to Nikki's point, there has been a group, a lot of the same people as part of this
right.
more organized coalition who've been pushing at the State House over the last few years. So can this make enough of a difference to sort of get a resolution to this issue?
It would be great if it did. And certainly the educational part of that is very important, because people get in and they get these payday loans and they don't realize that 391% annual interest means if they borrow $100, they're going to owe almost $400, and on and on and on. It is actually disgraceful that we allow that kind of interest in Indiana, and frankly, 36% is pretty high, but certainly not 391. It's ridiculous.
Jennifer Hollowell, is there a resolution to this issue on the horizon?
I have no idea. I've watched it, but you know, it certainly doesn't hurt for an organization to be mobilized like this and to coordinate messaging and advocacy and reaching out to folks. I mean, we have certainly seen that type of effort work in some areas, but frankly, we've also seen it fail several times over the last few years around certain big issues. It doesn't always matter how many names you get on a letterhead or how many organizations or charitable organizations even are combined working on the same thing if they're going uphill. And so, you know, I don't know what to expect, but it certainly makes sense that they would try to mobilize in a coordinated fashion.
All right. Well, finally, the NFL season got off to a bit of a rough start for the Indianapolis Colts and my hometown Chicago Bears, but new Colts quarterback Carson Wentz put up decent numbers in the opener despite the loss. He's also attracted some controversy as he took over for the Colts for his decision not to get vaccinated for COVID-19. Now, Ann Delaney, will Carson Wentz make it through the season without having to miss a game because of the harsher quarantine protocols for unvaccinated players?
I don't know, and I think it's incredibly selfish of him, both to his teammates and to his fans and to the Colt organization, for him to take this position. He ought to be an example to people rather than this kind of nonsense that throws everybody on the team in jeopardy and may throw the season in jeopardy, for that matter.
All right, very quickly, Nikki Kelly, are your Bengals going to beat my Bears this weekend?
Ooh, I'll take that bet.
Okay, I'm not betting. I don't expect the Bears to win either. Yeah, I don't expect the Bears to win. So just making sure. All right, well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, Dr. Terry Jett of Butler University, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy. Please get vaccinated if you can, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.